Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit DXEngineering.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 349 for May 2nd, 2018. Bob's latest pine board mods.
Good evening, everybody. It's Bob Heil. I'm in the Ozarks tonight. Things are great. Weather is fabulous, and we appreciate you being here. Very, very important show tonight. We have Michael Calter, who is one of the stalwarts of the Dayton Hamvention. He's got some news for us. Gordon is here, Don is here, George is here, and guess what? We're going to get the next installment from Valerie, and know more about LDW. Okay, so let's just kick it right over to Michael. He's on a satellite feed. We really caught him a short time, and we appreciate you doing that. But we want to learn a little bit about what's going on. I know there's some new things happening. You were here last time telling us, but the podium is yours. Let's hear what's going on, and we're so excited to be in Xenia. Go ahead, Michael. It's yours.
All right. Well, thank you. This is Michael, Whiskey 8 Charlie India, and really getting excited about Hamvention coming up. We're only 15 days and 11 hours away. Want to make sure everyone takes the time to look at our website, which is hamvention.org. There are some new things happening. We have more food to choose from. We think that last year was a big hit with food. This year it'll be even better, and we're going to have more food trucks to choose from. There is work being done in the flea market now. Actually, everything's lined up. The trucks, everything will be there tomorrow to start the remediation project. Everything's dried enough that we can really make a difference there. So we're looking forward to that. This year, there is also an extra forum room. We went from having four forums simultaneously to five. So be sure to check the schedule on that. And that should be a very exciting thing. We have a lot of expanded parking this year. And we want to really urge people, if you're going to come, try to park at one of the off-site spots. The other way around, they know how to get in. And I talked to the sheriff recently, and Gene Fisher, who is now a licensed amateur radio operator, and he's really excited, and he is really working hard to be sure that we have excellent traffic flows in and out of Hamvention. I do want to mention that, you know, I've seen people's concerns and listened to the concerns we all have about, well, what if I buy this great big piece of equipment, and then I'm going to take a bus back, and I got to ride cramped in a bus with this, with my new big amplifier. So we're going to have a place this year where you can check it in. We have a place where you can check in your equipment, then go back and get your car, and then drive through and get it very quickly. That way you won't be fighting the traffic, and you'll have there's going to be a certain traffic pattern to pick those things up. So we're going to give that a shot this year. I hope it works. Now, the next thing is we did not get the new building. We did get a building to use. It's called the Mercantile Building. Last year, it was being occupied by the Fairgrounds Furniture, and they have since moved out, and we have that building. It's a nice building, but we went to a lot higher grade tents this year since we couldn't get the building. We were not happy with the tents that we had last year, and we're placing them a little bit different so that we don't have the floods that came in through the tents during the torrential downpour. And we're trying to make arrangements to have excellent weather. By the way, the tents come with the lights already built in them. They have plenty of windows in them. It should be a big, big improvement from last year. So, and I do want to say that we have actually the same tent space as we had last year, plus the building, and plus there are vendors still calling and wanting to get in, and we are out of room, as far as I know, unless somebody drops out. So we're all pretty excited. The ticket sales, everybody in the county, the city, they're all excited. And matter of fact, even the city of Xenia, the community school system, which is a large part of Greene County, is closed that Friday also to help. Now, I know I've kind of gone on here a little bit, but I know you might have a question or two, but bring it on.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for being here because you did this on short notice. But it's really nice to have you and all that information. One of the things I found interesting, I was checking with the board there in Xenia, and I was asking about a new hotel they were building, and she was just unbelievably over the top about Hamvention. They're so thrilled to have Hamvention in their city, and they're doing a lot of things. There's going to be new hotels built. Won't be there for this year, but I guess for the next couple of years. So there's a huge future for Hamvention, and it'll be a little bit of growing pains, but so far it's been great, and you've fixed it. Everything that I heard from last year. So we're happy about that, and we thank you very, very much. Gordon, why don't you take it? No, see if you have a couple of questions for Michael. Go ahead, Gordon.
All right. Well, Michael, always good to see and hear you. We've had great correspondence between your entire committee, and we're ready. And, you know, those hams that go, let them stay behind, because this is for real hams that know how to deal with nearly anything. And that's the best part of a Hamvention, is you'll get nearly everything. So, Michael, any last words about those incoming and all of the excitement? Go ahead, Michael.
Well, thank you very much to all of you for having me on the program. I do apologize. I live in a rural area, and I have to use satellite internet when I'm at my home. Anyway, I want to thank you for being on, for having me on. And I do want to say that I like what you said, Gordon. You know, hams can take a slamming and keep on hamming. And we really want the best. All the volunteers do. I mean, we can, and we don't purposely try to screw anything up. We want to, when you're dealing with a lot of volunteers and we all give a tremendous amount of time, we're so excited to have all our guests come in. And I think the whole region is. I mean, there's big billboard electronic signs up that the time's been donated, that free of charge to us, advertising Hamvention. And also, we have more foreign visitors coming this year than we've ever had. That number is really climbing. So we're excited to, I'm sure you have a lot of folks from all over the world listening, and we're excited to see all of them as well. Anyway, I think I've given you kind of in a nutshell, real exciting stuff. If your question isn't answered, you know, you can find my address on, I'm good on QRZ. So thanks guys for having me on. And, you know, we're also really excited that Valerie made Amateur of the Year as well. So I'll say 73s. This is Whiskey 8 Charlie India. Over to you, Bob.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks for doing that from out the boonies, and know how it is. And I really appreciate that. We'll look forward to seeing you. We get in there on Tuesday. And all of us here at Ham Nation, thank you for everything you do and the entire 600 or 700 volunteers that make the Dayton Hamvention what it really is, and we'll see you there. And the all of our gang listening, they talked about forums. You want to write this down? They've put us in room one. That's the big one. Room one at 10:20 on Saturday morning. 10:20 Saturday morning, and that'll be the whole Ham Nation crew will be there, and we look forward to seeing you there. I think we'll probably videotape it. George usually does that, and we'll see some of it here a week or two after. Also, while you're there, if you want to stick around as that ends, we're going to have about a half an hour from yours truly. We're going to talk about this amazing new product. We'll demo it there, the Parametric Receive Audio System. I can't tell you enough what this is going to do for amateur radio. It's unbelievable. I know you're saying, well, it's your product. Yeah, right. It's been a dream of mine for years. We need it. Nobody's ever done this before, and so we'll be talking about that right after the hour from the Ham Nation. That's room one, Saturday, 10:20. And we'll look forward to seeing all of you there. So I'm going to get back over to Gordon. He's got some things for us, and we've got a lot of things going on tonight. One of the things, we're going to show you the last version of the Pine Board. It now has really grown. It's a three-band, switchable. It's amazing what's happened. I went over the top, and we'll have it on in a while. Valerie's got a really good port. She's doing her next version of the LOTW, so you want to stick around for that. And, of course, Dr. T and Don are here. But first, George has been out tricksing around a 50-kilowatt transmitter. I hope he got out safely. I haven't heard from him yet, but hopefully he will, or maybe Tommy drug him out. Who knows? As long as he used his chipstick, he'll be okay. Gordon, it's all yours, buddy.
Yeah, watch out for high voltage. And I look forward to seeing everybody at Dayton. And you know Dayton is official. Joe Levine has come up with, I think, one of the greatest pens. This is like his 15th pen. Every year he has a great one. And Joe, thanks for getting us ready for Dayton Hamvention and Michael Calder. We can't wait to get there. And I get in as early as Tuesday, so we'll be seeing all of you during the setup. Well, 3 years ago, we talked about a big file I had on Chinese radios. But before we go into the Chinese radios, I had a couple of folks say, you know, I charged my batteries up on my handheld, and 8 months later when I went to use it, the batteries were depleted. Well, that could be. It depends what kind of handheld you have and how it turns on. For those of you with an older handheld, and this is my favorite, ICOM, the 24AT, when you turn it on, it goes click, and it comes up on the air with a click. Some of the Chinese radios come on with a click, and they come up on the air. Yet other radios, some of the brand new radios, come on with a soft push button. If your radio has a push button, we call it that soft on, then that push button when the radio is turned off is still drawing maybe less than about 1 milliamp, maybe 500 microamps of current. Not to worry. Actually, not 500, more like 50 microamps, almost nothing. But it will slowly deplete a battery. So if you have a handheld and you're not planning on using it, simply slide the battery off, and then it will be fully ready to roll when you put the battery on. If your handheld goes click, turn on, turn off, then you're good to go. You don't need to worry about it slowly taking up a little bit of juice. Well, the Chinese handhelds are here, And for ham radio operators and some of the clubs that have adopted the Chinese handhelds for brand new hams, it's worked out well. Just a week ago, a 20-pack, that's 20 handhelds of UHF, available for $12 each. A 10-pack, a little bit more, $13.40 each. Dual band, about $37 each, and that's mail order from one of the large mail order companies. The mail order companies also advertise handhelds for businesses, and one of the very popular handhelds for businesses is the Retivus UHF-only handheld, and they came into the country, about 9 channels, make that 8 channels, were on the family radio service. That's okay. There's new FRS rules and GMRS rules that now sort of blend those two together, and the FC says they're no longer going to actually certify under Part 95 the FRS, GMRS radios coming in under the new rules. But these handhelds came with 8 FRS channels and 8 ham channels. And it was discovered by one of our local OOCs here in Southern California, and made contact with the operators. And they simply brought them in from the major retailer and put them on the air, went to a nice quiet channel, 446 point and a few fractions of a kilohertz later. So if you hear activity on 446, it's likely from some of these handhelds coming in from China, from Retivus, that are on UHF only, and they're sharing some of the ham channels. Well, we've been informed that the company is going to immediately drop out the ham radio side of the channel lineup and put in gosh knows what other channels, but something to think about. Now, my point is, there's nothing wrong, really, with an inexpensive, cheap Chinese radio. The problem is not with the radio electronics. Well, the second and third harmonics may not have passed the ARRL testing at the ham fest. But the big deal is we need to have every ham radio club embrace the opportunity to take in a recent test passer and say, hey, join our club. Bring your inexpensive single band or dual band or DMR, available for $78, handheld from China, and we will program it for you. And the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club that I went to several years ago, active programming for brand new hams that had passed the test. They had been encouraged at the VEC session with an outside ham radio group. Come on down and we'll get you on the air. Same thing out here in Southern California, the South Orange Amateur Radio Organization, SORA. They do the same thing on SORA Saturdays, promoting bring your handheld and we'll get you on the air. And of course, they program not only their own repeater, but all of the other channels. What's occurring, though, is many folks out in the boondocks will order the $12 to $15 or $29 handheld dual band, not have a clue how to program it. Oh, they got the Chirp software, and they can't even do it from the front panel. And they frustrate it, and they get out of ham radio. So I encourage all of you that are with a ham radio club to get into programming. And the best programming, certainly Chirp is there and it's available and it's free, but the best programming after 20 years of exploring every handheld known to mankind throughout the world, Karen and Rod of RT Systems. Yeah, it's a $50 deal, but let me tell you, their software works and their software takes away some of the exasperations with the Chirp software that you've got to put in the offset and get everything set up just right and it may or may not work. Karen and Rod have it. So if you're at the Dayton Hamvention, be sure and stop by the RT Systems booth and you could become your own club's programmer and be a real hero, and you may find that your club will grow once the word gets out that you're able to take a Chinese handheld and get it programmed. Well, of course, a lot of folks buy the Chinese handheld because it's inexpensive. But, you know, if you look around, here's an ICOM T70, and this T70A is not a whole bunch more expensive than what's coming out of China. And this is a two-band handheld, and it works super. And, of course, if you go for a more modern handheld with D-Star and all of the bells and whistles, for sure a brand-new ham is going to need your club to take on and say, come on over, let us get you on the D-Star, and let us help you program your handheld, and let us get you on the air. So for those of you wanting to build a ham radio club, that's a great way to go, and that is to offer free programming right there at the club meeting. So when that new ham leaves that meeting for the first club meeting, they've got a handheld that is playing all of the D-Star channels, playing all the FM channels, and making things happen, even with the inexpensive Chinese handhelds. Yep, the Chinese handhelds may not be as mechanically safe and secure or spectrally clean, but they do get folks into ham radio that otherwise shied away from maybe $500. But once they get going on the air, they're going to find out that it's not necessarily a big expensive handheld that they need, but a good quality handheld like the ICOM, Kenwood Yaesu, ICOM, and Alinco. These handhelds have local support as well as support from Karen and Rod with RT Systems. So that's my pitch, and that is let's not leave out these newcomers with a radio they brought in and are frustrated to pieces because this $12 radio doesn't program via the keypad as they thought it would. Great opportunity for your club to say, come on over, let us program your radio, join our club, pay your dues, and you're on the air. And on the air, I'm sure, is going to be Don. And Don, you know, everybody's talking about you. We've got our official Dayton pins on. Don, do you have your official pin on? Here's Don.
No, I don't know that I even have an official pin. I'm not going to make it to Hamvention this year, unfortunately. My son, Tyler, N7TMW, is graduating high school the Thursday after Hamvention on the 24th. So it's a big week for us. So not going to be making it to Hamvention this year, unfortunately. But I wish I had a pen. If I had a pen, I'd be happy as I could be. Probably won't be able to get one of those pens at DX Engineering, but you can get practically everything else at DX Engineering. Probably those RT Systems cables as well. Let me tell you something. There we go. What does it say? I'm not Will Banks. Is that what that says? Oh, that's hilarious. I've not seen that. Oh, that's funny. That's almost as funny as
there are thousands out there, Don. So.
Oh, my God. I got to have one. I need one of those to wear. Well, that's a lot more fun than the cardboard guy that we had last year. I'm not Will Banks. That's hilarious. Man. All right. I need one of those. That's all there is to it. That's hilarious as they can be. All right, so back to DX Engineering. The RT Systems cables, by the way, that's a great company. It's a great product. I used it to interface my Kenwood TS2000 to my computer, an RT Systems cable. So it's not just for handhelds. They have everything. And somebody else that has everything is DX Engineering. As we heard Michael Coulter tell us, Hamvention is just 15 days and a few hours away. And DX Engineering wants to make sure that you look good for the show. The DX Engineering apparel and collectibles section is just crammed full of shirts, hats, gifts, and gear for hams of any age and any gender. Just a few of the most popular products, these DX Engineering polo shirts. I'm sure you've seen us wear these things. They're the red, white, and black. It's a great choice when a club event calls for business casual. It's a lightweight, breathable polyester weave. There it is right there. And in fact, the white part is actually a mesh, so you can get a little bit of breathing in there. But what's great about the polyester weave is it's not heavy like cotton or anything, and it's not going to hold a bunch of moisture, which means it will wick any perspiration away that you have. And if you get caught in the rain, it's going to dry almost immediately. It's like a performance knit. It's a great shirt, extremely comfortable, and you definitely need one of those. And again, male or, men or women sizes. And to top off your new shirt, well, you need a hat, keep the sun off your face, make a fashion statement around the globe. DX Engineering has been posting photos of DX Expeditioners proudly wearing the official DX Engineering hat. It's a great hat. Want to get one for the whole club in time for Hamvention, so you'll all look sharp. Plan to plug a bunch of stuff or lug a bunch of stuff around Hamvention? Well, they have these gear bags at DX Engineering. They can fit Hamfest handouts, a little QRP rig, your HT, Field Day munchies. They're made of heavy-grade materials, resist rips and tears. And the material is reinforced in critical areas to handle additional stress. And they have a bunch of different – they have that style, and then they have this one, the one that George likes. I like them both. They're just great bags. Inside and outside pockets secure your small stuff. And as we showed you last week, I believe Bob did, there's actual a key loop inside that bag right there, the canvas bag. So you can put your car keys in there. Nothing worse than having your car keys bang around in your pocket while you're trying to walk around Hamvention. Wide straps, you can carry them around comfortably for hours. Secure all your small stuff. They're ideal for travel companions. Hold everything from spare cables and tools to a change of clothes, extra shoes, lunch, water bottles. DX Engineering umbrella, you're going to need that for sun or rain. It's a large 36-inch diameter umbrella, and it collapses to a compact size and includes a carrying pouch. So you could actually throw it in your back pocket. DX Engineering bundled some of their best-selling accessories to create gear combos for the hams in your life. And speaking of that umbrella, my wife keeps she stole mine. Tim Duffy sent me one. She stole it. She keeps it in her car. It's not even a ham, but she loves that DX Engineering umbrella. The gear combos, it's a great way to outfit yourself in style. They include assortment of gear like hats, bags, folding chairs, shirts, and more. There are five combos in all. You got to go to dxengineering.com and check them out. But it's not all about DX Engineering. Cruise over to dxengineering.com/hamnation, and you will see gifts, apparel, and shack accessories from names like Vibraplex, MFJ, and Heil Sound. DX Engineering is a great place for authentic ham radio gear just in time for Hamvention. DX Engineering, as you know, ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, most are shipped the same day. Proven products, expert advice, DX Engineering helping you shrink the globe. Request your catalog. Shop online 24/7, 365 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. And, of course, they're going to be all over Hamnation. They have that great big booth over there, so you'll be able to see Tim Duffy and Terry Greiser and Mel and everybody else over there, the whole DX Engineering squad. They're going to be all over Hamvention. So say hi to them for me, please. Somebody else that's going to be at Hamvention is going to be the QSO radio show with Ted Randall and WTWW. And, of course, they're carrying us live right now on 5085 and 12.105 with 100,000 watts, maybe just a smidgen more. Get that huge signal into Africa. And anything you'd like to let them know about ham radio related, email them. Email at WTWW.us. You can hear Bob Heil and the organ music on WTWW and a whole bunch of other stuff as well, including Amateur Radio Newsline. They're a huge supporter of Newsline and the Young Ham of the Year Award. And the Ted Randall family, just top-notch. You just can't beat them. Just can't. And speaking of Amateur Radio Newsline, why don't we get the news of the week now and a solar update from Dr. T right now from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2113, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. We begin this week with a cautionary tale about towers and tower safety. This one from a tragedy outside a TV station in Missouri.
The 2,000-foot-tall tower of a local public TV station in Webster County, Missouri, collapsed on the 19th of April, killing one worker and injuring three others. The crew was conducting maintenance outside Ozark Public Television Station KOZK when the structure toppled. Several members of the crew were on the tower about 105 feet off the ground when the collapse occurred. The worker who was killed had been trapped beneath the tower's debris. The station is a public broadcasting system affiliate operated by Missouri State University. Stations in the region have assisted by helping restore service to the station. Local authorities are investigating to determine the cause. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Christian Kudnick, K0STH.
This story is a reminder as well to all of our listeners to please follow safety precautions when doing any tower work, whether commercial, broadcast, or amateur. You can't be careful enough. The amateur radio operator who brought television to the White House has become a silent key.
Frank Victor Tarkington, W3KLQ, the amateur radio operator who installed the first White House TV set for President Harry S. Truman in 1948, has become a silent key. Those who worked the Navy Veteran Station in Silver Spring, Maryland, were making contact with a slice of history. The World War II vet had witnessed the arming of the Enola Gay while he was on the island of Tinian operating the radar station. By the time he left the service, he had been advanced to chief radio man. After the war, he worked for RCA, and in 1948, it was his job to install a 10-inch screen in the White House Oval Office so President Truman could watch the opening of Congress that year. Frank was an avid CW enthusiast, according to John Creel, WB3GXW. John and Frank, and many others, could be heard on the WB3GXW 2-meter repeater in Silver Spring, Maryland, up until a few years ago. The Oakland, California native died on April 19th at the age of 102. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
For bicycle enthusiasts in Australia, operating mobile was perhaps never this much fun.
Amateur radio is on a roll in Australia, and when we say roll, we do mean roll. Hams are rolling out their bicycles, their trikes, and even their velomobiles, and going places. Of course, they're not going anywhere without their trusty rigs. Members of a month-old online group called Pedal Radio have been promoting the combination of push power and foot power with the idea that fitness leads to fellowship and probably more than a few good QSOs. There is also a homebrew aspect to the group as some members share their tips for building your own trike. Most of the members right now are in VK3. If you want to try talking coast to coast while you're coasting, this group wouldn't mind if you rolled on in. Send a post to the group's address, pedalradio@groups.io. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
It's May, the final month in the nominating period for the 2018 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award. You'll find full information and the nominating form on our website, www.arnewsline.org. Just look at the top under the YHOTY tab. Nominations close at midnight Thursday, May 31st. And for the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Christian Kudnick, K0STH, Heather Emby, KB3TZD, Graham Kemp, VK4BB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
Space weather has really quieted down over the past few days, but is it the calm before the storm? That story and more in the news this week. Space weather this week has really quieted down, especially compared to that stealthy solar storm we had just a little bit more than a week ago that was so intense it actually brought Aurora clear down to Indiana. And the funny thing was that it happened when many of us scientists who are chasing these stealthy solar storms were in Bern, Switzerland to study exactly that. And believe it or not, the debate still rages on between us all as we continue to try to figure out how best to detect these things so we don't get caught off guard like we were last week. Meanwhile, the sun has been moving region 2706 off to the west limb. You amateur radio operators have enjoyed some decent radio propagation because it's boosted the solar flux, but we are now saying goodbye to that region as it rotates to the backside of the sun, and now the sun is spotless again. The good news, however, is that new regions are going to be rotating into Earth view here in the next few days, and hopefully that will give radio propagation a little bit of a boost. Now, you Aurora photographers, you also are still laying in wait since that huge solar storm that we had a little bit more than a week ago, but we do have a well-formed coronal hole that is going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here, probably starting sometime next week, early next week. So that should give you some new chance for Aurora that may not last very long, and it may not be as strong as the last storm we had, but it might actually bring Aurora down to mid-latitudes. Switching to our M-Flare threat meter, you can see we are still in solar minimum conditions when it comes to X-ray flux and therefore by proxy the solar flux as well. Right around the 18th, you actually saw the X-ray flux ramp up a bit. That was when region 2706 rotated into Earth view and it stayed just around the B floor easily for about 2 weeks. And so you radio amateurs enjoyed some decent propagation on the bands on the Earth's day side for a while. But now as we get the beginning of May, we see that that region has rotated off of the sun's west limb and to the sun's backside. And of course, the solar flux drops right with it. The X-ray flux drops right with it. And we're back to poor radio conditions for you guys. Luckily, this is not going to last too long because we do have those new regions that are going to be rotating into Earth view here in the next few days. It probably won't boost the solar flux too much, but it might just get us back up to marginal propagation. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see back on the 20th is when we got slammed by that stealthy solar storm. Now, it's still debatable whether or not this storm was caused just by some fast wind or it did the sun launch an additional eruption that got embedded in this fast wind. And then that's what kicked us up to a moderate level storm. Now, it doesn't matter because it was bigger than we predicted it to be, and that is a problem for us. And the fact that this storm happened like this when many of us scientists were already in Bern, Switzerland, trying to figure out how to detect storms just like this, tells us a lot about how common these types of storms are becoming in our daily lives. So this was really a timely event, and I'm so glad that we can add it to our roster. Now, since that storm died down, you can see we've kind of gone back to unsettled and now normal conditions, and we've been hovering around unsettled to normal conditions over the past week or so. But this is going to change here pretty soon because the beginning of next week gives us another chance for a solar storm. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, as we've said before, it's a very quiet week, folks. At high latitudes, NOAA is only expecting unsettled conditions with maybe about a 15% chance of active conditions due to a remnant coronal hole that's rotating through the Earth strike zone right now and maybe going to give us a little bit of disturbed solar wind, but really not much to talk about. At mid-latitudes, the conditions are even quieter, only expecting normal to unsettled conditions with only about a 5 to 10% chance of activity. But this should change the beginning of next week. We might bump up to active conditions or even minor storm conditions, especially at high latitudes, when we get hit with yet another solar storm. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares. We are back to a spotless sun, and that means, of course, that the solar flux remains very low. We're back into poor radio propagation for you amateur radio operators and emergency responders. The nice thing is that at the end of the week, we should start seeing some evidence of the new regions that are going to be rotating into Earth view, and it might bump the solar flux up again and hopefully get us back into marginal propagation. So the sun's activity this week is kind of, but what do you expect when we're so close to solar minimum? At least a lot more people now are beginning to talk about how it looks like we're zipping through the solar minimum much faster than predicted. So that's some good news for all of us, I think. Meanwhile, we have to wait a few days for you amateur radio operators to get some new regions rotating into Earth view that should bump up radio propagation, hopefully back to the marginal levels. And you aurora photographers, you have good news on the horizon too next week because this coronal hole will be rotating into the Earth strike zone and hopefully giving you yet another solar storm and some chances for aurora. And then you GPS operators, well, you should be enjoying some clean reception right now with such a quiet sun. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Oh, awesome. Always great information from Dr. T. We are so blessed to have her here with us, that's for sure. Okay, so the buttons. I'm not, well, that's hilarious. Last year, of course, we had these things. And, you know, we had these. And so now we have the buttons. I think my favorite one from last year, though, had to have been, besides the full-size or almost full-size cardboard cutout, is this one right here. And this pretty much... this pretty much says it all. So I'll tell you what, as we head into a word from ICOM and then get into what George and the rest of the guys say, is we'll just leave you with this view right here. 7-3, guys. Let's hear a word from Ike. Come back to me real quick. Vic, take a look at this. This is, there you go. That's what we wanted. There you go. That pretty much says it all. So why don't we just leave that there and get a word from ICOM.
Spring is in the air. Check out ICOM's line of D-Star radios. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products, and you can stay connected around the world with ICOM's D-Star radios. ICOM's newest D-Star handheld is ready for the season ahead. Lightweight, compact, and tough, the new ID31A Plus is a great choice for any shack or those in harsh environments. 70 centimeters, analog and digital, terminal mode, access point mode, and its IPX waterproof rating. The ICOM ID51A Plus 2 provides extended D-Star coverage, allowing you to listen to whatever you want. Terminal and access mode, send and receive text messages and pictures, DV fast data mode, and easy FM repeater setting. The compact and user-friendly ID4100A is a D-Star mobile with big rig features. Its intuitive interface, variety of operating modes, and Bluetooth capability make this a preferred D-Star option for those on the go. Integrated GPS receiver, new dot matrix display for enhanced DR mode and GPS information, terminal mode and access point mode, applications for iOS and Android devices, and there's a micro SD card slot for voice and data storage. ICOM's ID5100A has taken innovation and mobility to the next level. With its touchscreen and internal GPS, this radio is a must-have while assessing a situation. 5.5-inch display responds naturally to the touch. DV-DV dual watch receives both FM-FM and FM-DV modes simultaneously. VS-3 Bluetooth headset provides hands-free communications, and you can show your position, course, and speed with the integrated GPS receiver. Learn more about D-Star today. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For April, that radio was the ICOM ID5100A, the innovative 2-meter, 70-centimeter mobile with touchscreen. Well, we've got a winner on that. It is John H. Nocall. And no, he didn't have a call, or at least he didn't submit it when he entered the contest. So congratulations, John H. You're really going to like that radio if you got a license. If not, you're going to have to get busy studying. We've got another great radio coming up for May. It's going to be the ICOM ID4100A entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features. It's a VHF, UHF dual-pan transceiver, built-in GPS, a micro SD card slot for voice and data storage. You can get an Android and an iOS app available. And it's got the DV-FM near repeater search function. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. And don't forget, while you're there, you can also register to win one of ICOM's Hamvention prize package or swag packages that they'll be giving away. So throw your name in the hat on that as well. An event Don mentioned earlier. I'll be there. Don will be there. Yes, that's right. I'm not Will Banks, but I will be there. My partner Tommy will be there. A lot of folks are going to be there for the Arcadiana Amateur Radio Association's Triple D Plus One event. It'll be going on this Saturday at 9 a.m. in Lafayette, Louisiana at the Lafayette Science Museum. They got great prizes, an ID5100A, ID4100A, and an ID51A. They're going to have jambalaya and pastelaya served for lunch. A lot of speakers there, Ray Novak, Will Jourdain from ICOM, John Davis, Ed Woodrick, Jim McClellan, David Norris, John Mark Robertson, Michael McCrary, and Robin Cutshaw will be appearing via Skype. So a lot of D-Star experts on site there. It's going to be a full event, a great forum on D-Star there. And
you should come and hear how people are using D-Star for emergencies and public safety communications. There'll be a lot of information on that, as well as some programming and operational basics. If you can't make it, well, go to live.amateurlogic.tv. We'll be streaming it there live, and you can catch it, follow right along. And that we're planning on posting that as well afterwards. So that will be available for a while. So that's Saturday, 9 a.m., live in Lafayette, Louisiana, at the Science Museum. Well, as Bob mentioned earlier, I went to a 50-kilowatt transmitter site yesterday, and I was going to shoot a little video to kind of show you what's there. You know, not last time, but several years back, I did a little video of my access to one particular FM site, what I had to go through to get there. And so I shot that this time because a lot of folks had comments about that and seemed to like it. So I've got a lot more footage from this particular site. But tonight we're going to look at what it takes to get to the transmitter site.
We're on our way to a transmitter site this afternoon. This one I affectionately call the swamp. Now, it may not look like a swamp today because it hadn't rained in about a week, and it's not really the rainy season right now. It's getting narrower, and you can see that's a testing area for the center stripe machine. Tracks to cross here. Oh, it's not going to be bad at all today. Been doing some logging back in here, so that's why you've got these machines on the side of the road. Now the pavement ends, and it's not wet today, so this is not bad. As you can see, they've really got some holes and ruts out here that need to be repaired. And there's still a little mud, too. You can imagine when it's raining that this could get pretty bad. Actually had to walk from that railroad track back there all the way in here on more than one occasion. If we look over to the right, you might see three towers back there. That's where we're headed. Just ahead here, they're building a new four-lane road that they built up the dirt for, And it's been sitting there for 2 or 3 years now with no pavement. So maybe one day. And then that'll give us a good road out to this point. Now, right about here is where we should have the sign that says Gravel Ends. And you can see somebody has been out here, although no one has any business going out here but me and maybe the people checking the utility meter. Doesn't stop them, though. When it's been raining, like it will be in another day or so here, all this is just mud. It's interesting. I can see they have actually been out here and done some work. There's a culvert under the road right here that the beavers dam up regularly, and you can see before this was dug out, that water down there came all the way up to the edge of the road here and would cross over at times. But what you're seeing out there, there is water standing there most of the year. Alligators, snakes, deer, and who knows what else is back in there. They cleaned out this one too. It was pretty bad. As was this one, and you can see here the road had been washing through. And they still didn't patch it very good. Here we are. There's a transmitter building. Let's get out and have a look around.
And we'll have to look around next time. Something I didn't show you there. Well, the last place I dug out the culvert, and you could see there was a dip in the road. And, you know, that's going to be a real problem area when it rains. So I went back, took a hoe that I had at the transmitter site, kind of filled it in, and I had my Explorer there. You know, I've got a four-wheel drive Explorer, which is real handy getting out there, although certainly yesterday I didn't need it. There was some mud, but not nearly as bad as it is when it's rainy. Fortunately, or unfortunately, that's a pretty narrow road. After I pulled all that dirt in, I decided I'd ride my Explorer through it a few times to kind of pack it down. Not the best idea because that stuff kind of shifts around and, well, you can see what happened here. I got one tire off the edge. And when that happened, the rear tire on the opposite side no longer touches the ground. So even though it was a four-wheel drive, I was stuck. I got another guy from work to come out in a vehicle. And I carry toe straps with me now, I've learned. So he came out and just a little pull. We got right out of that. So you never know what kind of adventure you're going to get into when you go out to one of these sites. This was a fairly painless day here. As I mentioned, I've had to walk in there before. The station was off the air, and I couldn't get past the railroad track. You have to think what could possibly be wrong, you know, that's got the station down, and what kind of tools am I going to need? Because you can't take the whole toolbox that far, so you have to grab a pair of pliers, maybe a couple of screwdrivers, some wire cutters, or, you know, whatever you think might fix the problem and just head on out. But we'll have another look here coming up soon, and we'll actually look at the transmitter. We'll look at some directional antenna phasing equipment and some of the other gear that you'll need around a 50-kilowatt station. That's a lot of power. So you have to be kind of careful around there, and certainly you don't want to put your hand in the wrong place. But the transmitter's not the only thing you got to look out for. We'll maybe see some of that next time. Anyway, I've got a question here. You know, last week I pulled out Gordo's General Class Amateur Radio Study Guide here, and I had a question. We were talking about HF antennas on Ham College this past weekend, and I decided, well, I'll just read one of the questions we're going to have on that. Which of the following antenna types will be most effective for skip communications on 40 meters during the day? Is it a vertical antenna? Is it a horizontal dipole placed between 1/8 and 1/4 wavelength above the ground? A left-handed circularly polarized antenna or a right-handed circularly polarized antenna? Well, John Davis, WA8YXM, knew, and John said, George, it is a horizontal dipole placed between 1/8 and 1/4 wavelength above the ground. So congratulations, John. You're going to win this nice. And I believe Don was talking about these earlier. It's the DX Engineering tote bag, a nice heavy-duty canvas tote bag, perfect for carrying your coax, extension cords, whatever outdoor activities you may have going on in the ham radio world. You'll want one of these. Very nice, very rugged. Congratulations, John. You're going to like that. As long as we're talking about antennas, and I think Gordo's gone now. I don't believe he's around here. I'm going to give away one of his books. If you'd like to win one of Gordon's amateur radio study guides, not just the general, you can get the technician, the general, or the extra license exam book. Answer this question for me. How does the feed point impedance of a half-wave dipole antenna change as the antenna is lowered below 1/4 wavelength above ground? It steadily increases. It steadily decreases. It peaks at about 1/8 of a wavelength above the ground. Or the impedance is unaffected by the height above ground. You think you know that? Send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you might win one of Gordon West Radio School's general class or technician or extra class amateur radio study guides. And now, let's see, what do we have next here? Well, I think, Bob, you've been back at the Pine Board there, and I think, wow, we talked yesterday, you're getting near the end.
Well, there's never an end. There's always stuff we'll be doing with it. However, I can't go any further, and you're going to find out in a minute why. First of all, George, I want to remind you, you do need your chipstick. However, at 50,000 watts, this won't do it. You're going to need what they call the Jesus stick, right? But that's where Chip got this idea. Also, make sure you make things happen to ground before you go in there. But you know all about that. Well, a year ago, and it's been a little over a year, we started this project. Everybody took to it. Hundreds of you. How do I know that? Call AES, Antique Electronics Supply. They're selling parts like crazy. So that's how kind of some of the ways we can count. It went really crazy, and I was so thrilled because a lot of people are building that have never built before. What's really cool is a lot of guys that got out of ham radio as they left their teenage years, got into college, had a family, had a career. They're coming back, but ham radio is not what it was in 1960 or whatever. So they enjoy this. So we went crazy. One of the things that this led to, and I want to, everybody get your pencils out. This Saturday, Leo Laporte, the head twit here at the network, has a show. If you don't know about this show, it's how so many of us learned so much about computers and everything else decades ago that he started on his screensavers and stuff like that up on C-band satellite. Well, next Saturday, his second hour of the tech guy. Just go to the network lineup next Saturday because he had me on as a guest. But it really wasn't about me. He wanted to talk about this. And so we were able to bring the word of ham radio and building to over a million listeners. He's on 160 radio stations on that Saturday, Sunday show. If you don't know about that, you need to do it. There it is right there. The tech guy. It is really something. So next Saturday on that second hour, we're going to talk about ham radio to all these millions of people that sometimes think it went away. Well, it certainly didn't. For me, it's gotten crazy. It really did get crazy. Well, let me show you what the Pine Board has evolved into. It is now a three-band band-switching transmitter, 160 meters, the full coil, 75 meters, and 40 meters. And it band switches, and it switches the three crystals. I also added the antenna relay from Gene, W4IQN. He came up with a kind of a novel arrangement of that antenna relay. It shorts the receiver out in receive, so you don't put any RF in the receiver. It's pretty cool. In addition to that, there are a pair of contacts that we bring out here that you can mute your receiver. And we're going to have to get into some of that because everybody wants to build a receiver. I got to tell you, that is a huge project, even for those that have built for years. I suggest you go to a ham fest and spend $100 and buy a Hallicrafters XX99 or Hallicrafter S20 or a Hammerlin. There's a number of receivers I see all the time at these ham fests, and you need to do that. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, there are the muting contacts. So when you key this baby up, bingo. Well, we got it on. Let's switch it. Before I switch the camera, we're on 160 meters. I selected that with this guy. And we'll tune her up, and here we go. Hopefully you can see the light back in there. It's 160 meters, 5 watts. Now we're going to go to 75 meters, and we'll tune that little booger up. 75 meters, let's go over here. Hard me to do where it is. Passed it up. There's 75 meters. And then we'll go to 40 meters. And here comes 40 meters up here. come on here. I knocked this off a while ago, George. Look what I did. I picked it up by that wire. Like, come on. So I got to resolder that. But anyway, there's 40 meters. So we got 40 meters. We've got 75 meters. And we got 160 meters. Is that cool or what? Let me show you some of the other things that, happened here. Just a second. Excellent, excellent camera work here. Right.
Oh, golly. Let's go about right there. And we'll
describe some of this good stuff. It took me a while to do this, I have to tell you. It really took a while to do this. But I've had some situations here in the last few months that I was able to be home and do it. The basic transmitter stayed exactly the same. In fact, this whole transmitter that originated in that QSD article is only held onto the board by about four screws plus the two socket screws. I picked that whole thing up. I figured, oh, this is going to be a disaster. Oh, no. And, oh, we're going to be in trouble. But I picked the whole thing up. I slid the bigger board. I went down to Lowe's and chopped me out a bigger board and slid it underneath there. And by golly, it worked. I put the old coil back. You know, the coil was only that big. Then that gave me room for this larger coil, the MFJ coil. Also room to put the antenna relay. And it just all worked together quite nicely. And this has been... It had been something in the back of my mind for a long time, and we did it. Now, let me bring this back up, because I'll show you how it all worked out. This is the diagram. You'll remember seeing this that Gene did. Nothing changed there, but what I wanted to show you is we got to pay attention to the crystal socket. We're going to do another drawing on that soon. This isn't... the next drawing I'm going to show you isn't inclusive. But here, pay attention right here. This cap. That cap comes off the plate, feeds the coil. Okay, got that? We keep that. And here's what we did. You'll see that cap at the top of the page here. Yeah, come on here. There's that cap right there. And that cap came off of the pin 6 of the 6AG7. All of that remained the same, as well as the antenna coil, the connector, I'm all right. But there we put the bigger coil and the taps. And it was 46 turns, 14 turns, and 27 turns is how we tapped it. And it works great. There's a diagram of it. And that's the band switching, and it's so simple. Just look how simple that is. You know, you think about, oh, my gosh, a band switching transmitter. That's all there is to it. Look how simple that was. And if we didn't have a band switch, well, just think about it this way. If you just had a 40-meter transmitter, you'd only have that coil. Bingo. That's all you'd have. You have the same 365 puff that worked the same, but you make the coil bigger and we select it here and go to the antenna, make it bigger. Look how simple that is to have band switching in the final. It's just so cool. I've showed this several times. I'm really happy with this. This is quite neat. Gene did this W4IQN. And it's a unique situation where the receiver is grounded on transmit. And so when that relay is activated, it grounds the receiver so you don't put RF into it. Kind of a neat deal. Just kind of a neat deal. And one other thing we did to it, and we'll have to talk about that later on in another show perhaps, but I put an XLR connector one of our XT1 transmitters. By the way, I have the power shut off, everybody. And the high impedance. So we have a high impedance input and a low impedance input. And that is easily done like this. Very simple. And it works great. But that's what's happened to the pine board. And we've got other things that we'll do in addition. I'm still looking into some amplifiers and stuff. But things have been a little crazy around here. Getting the new product ready has been taking a lot of my time. And so I will do others as we get around to it here in a month or two after Dayton. But the parametric receive audio system is phenomenal. I know I talk about it too much, but it just blows me away. It's been a dream of several years, and I finally said, let's do it. So we'll all get to that, Dayton. Remember, Dayton, at around 10:15, we'll start gathering in room one. And we're looking forward to seeing all of you there. So that's what's going on from Pleasant Hope. And we're going to be back in Illinois at the factory next week because we'll be packing up trucks for Dayton, and we'll see you all there. One of the reasons you want to come to Dayton, probably a main reason, is to meet the Amateur Radio Operator of the Year. Think about this. How many thousands are there of hams? Well, here you are. It's Valerie, and she is the ham of the year. Congratulations, lady. That's really cool. And I know somebody that's sitting probably beside you that's really proud, and so are we. So we look forward to seeing you there. And you've got some information, so let's go.
Thanks, Bob. You embarrassed me, and thank you. Hey, I got one of these, too. Just so you know, there's going to be a whole bunch of us wearing these at Dayton. If you see us wearing them, come up, get your picture taken with us, and then I want you to tweet it with a hashtag, I'm not Will Banks. Let's see if we can get it trending at Dayton. So there's going to be a lot of these out there. So that'll be a good homage to Don not being able to be there, fortunately. One of these years, we got to get Amanda there as well. You got your license, your new license, ham, or you upgraded, and you're going to get off 2 meters, and you're going to start working other people around the country or around the globe. The way people are going to do it is QSL cards. Now, they're great. I love getting QSL cards. This one's really cute. This is one of my favorites. I just got this one in the mail. Kind of cute. But that's a lot of work. I just got this in the last week to 10 days. That's a lot of work. So, best way to avoid that is getting on LOTW. And I know it's kind of intimidating. 2 weeks ago, I did the part one series on how to install the TQSL onto your computer. And then you request your card. So, hopefully by now, you guys got your cards. And for you international stations, you don't have to do that request a card. You just have to send them the email with a copy of your license, and hopefully you've got your email by now. So let's go ahead and show what you do once you get the card back from LOTW, if you want to go ahead and roll that. Well, I hope by now everybody received their postcard in the mail from LOTW. And the card will look like this. If you did and you turn it over to the back, it's going to list the website you're going to need to go to in order to enter your call sign and your password that they gave you on the card. It's this address right here. And once you get there, make sure you put in your call sign. And then it's going to ask for your password. And that's going to be that 8-digit, mostly letters, there may be a number or two in there, passcode above the address line. This is the passcode circled in red right here, but you can't use that one because that one's mine. Enter that and click there, and now it has requested your certificate electronically, which you should have on your LOTW page within a few business days. So all you have to do now is wait for the email.
You've got mail, baby, yeah!
And you're going to want to open that up and go to the very bottom of the email. There's a blue link to click. Click on that, and that's going to bring you here, which is also this URL right here. Also noted on that
email is a brand new password entered, not the same codes you put in from that postcard. It's a whole new password, so make sure you enter that here. And then go ahead and log in. And then go over to the Your Account section there on the top right. And in there, you can go to the certificate area and click on Download the Certificate. Now you see it downloading there at the bottom. Once that is done, you can minimize this screen and bring up your QSL icon that you set up on LOTW Part 1. Go into the Certificate tab at the top there. And that first option to upload your certificate. My downloads automatically go to a download folder, so go there, see the icon there, click that and hit the open button at the bottom. And follow the instructions. And now you have a valid certificate. All right, next thing we're going to do is set up your home location information. You can set up multiple locations. Like when I lived in Wisconsin, I'd sometimes come down to Jerry's and operate, so I had two set up so I knew which county I was in when I operated. So this one, you're going to put in your grid square, your ITU zone, and your CQ zone. Now, if you don't know what those are, it should show it on your QRZ page in the details section. Once you enter that, go in and put in your state and then your county. And hit your next button. And then you're going to want to label that one, like home QTH or home or whatever. And there you go. You have that one's all set up. Now let's go back to your LOTW page. I recommend you change your password. You could store it because it's a weird digit thing that you'll never remember. But what happens if your computer goes down or you're somewhere else and need to log in? So I like to change it to something I'm going to remember. And since it came via email, who knows how secure that was, it's just a good idea to change that password. And then store it, and you're good.
So next week, I'll show you part 3, how to upload logs and go for awards and stuff. And it really is a fun way to track your awards. And it's going to give you your confirmations a lot quicker. As a matter of fact, I passed a nice milestone in the last 2 weeks. I now have 2,005 van countries. And that includes 145 countries on 160 I'm up to now. So a lot of that probably has to do with FT8. And I'm going to show that to you after Dayton. I've got a lot going on right now. I've been doing a lot of presentations for local clubs and stuff. So when I get back from Dayton, I'm probably going to show you how to use FT8 because it really does help you get a lot of these low bands now that we're in the solar minimum. So it's a good thing. Next, we have our DX report. Oh, I got a new little thing. Thanks, Victor. That's pretty cool. Right now, going on till May 5th, we got the Alpha 52 YL in Bhutan. This is 2 YLs on this one, if you want to show the next slide. Janet, who I meet at Hamvention every year, and I didn't know she was a big DXer like that. Whiskey Alpha Zero, Whiskey Oscar Fox, and Mayo, Juliet Romeo 3, Mike Victor Foxtrot. So it's two chicks out on Bhutan. I think that's very cool. Next one is Mozambique. They're on right now, and they're going to be there till the 9th. And that's Charlie 96 Radio Radio Charlie and Charlie 98 Radio Radio Charlie. I've been seeing them getting spotted all over the place. Next one is also, No You're Not Seeing Double, another Mozambique, and that's Charlie 8 Tango. A lot of guys on this one, so something tells me they got a lot of hardware, too, some good antennas, maybe. They're going to be there supposedly the 2nd through the 15th, so any day now you should hear the Charlie 8 Tango as well. Next one is Lord Howe Island, Victor Kilo 9, Lima, Italy. That's going to be the 10th through the 18th. Kind of getting infringing on the Hamvention, so hopefully I can work those guys before I head off to Dayton. Next one is Gibraltar, and that's May 17th through the 21st. And I think that's it as far as DX goes, but the next one I want to talk about is contest. This weekend is CUSO Party Extravaganza. You got Delaware, you got Indiana, you got the New England CUSO Party, which includes those six states right there, Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Vermont, plus the Seventh Call Area CUSO Party, which is Washington, Idaho, Oregon, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, Utah, and Arizona. And if you're worried about having to flip between your N1MM software, you know, create a log for the Indiana CUSO Party, then create one for the Seventh Call Area and go in and out of each one as you work a queue, you don't have to worry about that because they have it on N1MM. I'm not sure about other logging softwares, but N1MM, when you go in and create a new log and you check the CUSO Party in the dropdown, and then they'll give you a little dropdown there on the right. If you go all the way down, there's one called IN7QPNE. So that'll cover everything but Delaware. So you got the Indiana CUSO Party. You can record in that log as well as the 7QP, as well as the New England CUSO Party. All in one log makes it really easy. So hopefully you guys will get on the air and help all these counties out. And that's all I've got for my DX and contesting report this week. So I'm going to head it over to Amanda, see what's shaking in the chat room.
Oh, boy. I tell you what. First, Val, thank you so much for the LOTW update. And you make it look so simple when all of us were so overwhelmed the first time we signed up. I'll give you that. All right. Let's go over a few things here. I have a couple announcements. First, we have the NearFest. It's an international event run by and for all radio hobbyists and enthusiasts, including ham, shortwave listeners, scanner buffs, vintage antique radio fans, etc. NearFest is held annually, spring and fall, rain or shine, at the Deerfield Fairgrounds in Deerfield, New Hampshire. It starts this Friday at 0900, ending Saturday at 1500 hours. Admission is $10, unless you're under 18 or over 80. For more information, please check out near-fest.com. So next one we have, Valerie, do you know how to pronounce this Kishwaukee Amateur Radio Club? Is that how you would say that?
Probably Kishwaukee, yeah.
Kishwaukee. I just got to say it faster. Kishwaukee. Sunday, May 6th, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Sandwich Fairgrounds in Sandwich, Illinois. Hope you guys can all get there if you're in that area. Next, I have this really cute story, and actually Bob got this story, and I'm going to share it. This is from NL7XM, Pete the Geek. For a week now, my son-in-law has been plagued by waves of harmonic interference. Originally propagated 9 months ago at his QTH. He detected a signal shortly after a geophysical alert and finally made an eyeball contact on Wednesday afternoon, April 18th at 1326 UTC, when she spuriously emitted by her mother after a few push-pull cycles in a close proximity of the rectified field apparatus. Her name is Paige Annalise. She weighs 7 pounds, 5 ounces, and is 19 inches, which is exactly a quarter wavelength on 2 meters. The source of the regeneration was initially identified as oscillation of the skin effect, but it's been relayed to me that after there's a likely coordinated repeater at this site in about 2 years, in spite of certain feedback, they plan to have the leads and the probe tool short-circuited and shunted, so it will only function as an attenuated hybrid generator. I'm sorry. And to ensure complete compliance, her mother may even have her receiver's phase locked, looped, and polarized so her Doppler is shifted to neutral bias. Mother and baby are doing fine, and this harmonic should have her own call sign by the peak of the next solar sunspot cycle. Do we want to show the picture of Paige, Victor? She is the cutest little girl. And congratulations, Pete, on your granddaughter. We're very proud of you. It was really cute, Pete. Thanks for writing that way. I thought it was adorable. Me personally today, we're a little exhausted. We did a CSEP exercise, which is the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Plan. This happens only in 2 places in the country, one in Kentucky, one here in Colorado, because we are still the remainder stockpiles of mustard gas. So we do this emergency preparedness plan every year, and we make sure that we're ready to assume any responsibilities asked by or served agencies if there's a need, if there is a breakdown in the weapons, and also other certain emergency events throughout the county as well. So that was a very long day. I've been up for a very long time today, and I'm spent. So let's go over some nets. We've got the 40-meter net on 7192. That's Kevin's going to host that. Unfortunately, Steve, K7UDI, who usually hosts either a 20-meter net or 80-meter net, is out for the night. So just look for that. And on our digital nets, we have TAC 311 on DMR and 14 Charlie for D-Star net. And don't forget our Echo Link Dewdrop in net. So that's what I've got. George, I heard you're wrapping this up now that you've gotten out of the swamp.
Yeah, Amanda, I am. And all I can say is that was a cute story there. I'm just glad Don wasn't here to share it with us, because you don't know where that could have gone.
I know. I was actually a little bit happy, but I am wearing my button. I can get the right one there. I'm not wielding.
Yep. Well, I tried putting mine on earlier, but it was just too much manly manliness for me this week, so I hung it at the microphone stand here, to use a term from Don. Actually, I wore it last week thinking, not knowing if he was going to see it or not. He never saw it, so.
I know. I put mine here on my microphone.
Yeah.
But I think the glare from the light was hitting it, and I don't think he stayed on at the end of the show, so he didn't get to see it. The subliminal messages didn't work out quite right, but he noticed this time, thanks to Gordo. He made sure he noticed.
All right. Well, before we go, Val, any final words from you tonight?
No, I just can't wait to see everybody at Hamvention in 2 weeks. Looking forward to it. I can't believe 2 weeks from today I'll be there. And make sure you see anybody with this. Take a picture. Hashtag, I'm not Will Banks. Tweet it.
Well, I think that's awesome. I think that's a great hashtag, and Don's really going to like it. And Val, expect a package next week. Just saying.
And I'll probably look on the tweets, look for that hashtag, and I'll probably pull some of those photos and put them on Ham Nation. So that might be a little incentive too.
There you go. That'll be fun. Well, I'll just be taking them here at home with a bag of Cheetos. Like, I wish I was there. I wish I was there.
Oh, is my package some eyeball cards you got us for Dayton?
Yeah. Yeah, you should
need
probably
a bill
see them
too.
Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to Dayton, you got to get some eyeball cards. You can pass them out with your name and your phone number on them. It's much easier. Yeah, Amanda does a good job. So she ordered them from Jerry and I for Dayton.
There you go.
Jeff is going to have to bring you, Amanda. That's just all there is to it. I know he really wants to come, too.
Wait a second. Speaking of Jeff. Oh, he's denying the camera, but it is his birthday. So happy 21st birthday, Jeff.
Happy birthday, old man.
Happy birthday. I tried to get Jerry on because he loves Bob's new board. And he was going to talk about it, but he just came in from mowing the lawn, and he's not ready for prime time right now.
That's Jeff right here. This was a long day today, and he's in his shorts and tank top, and he says no. He walked through the room, no. So that's it. Okay, let's get out of here.
Good to see everyone this week. Thanks for being here on Ham Nation. Join us again next week at the same time, and if you're in Lafayette, Louisiana, or anywhere in the area this weekend, don't forget to drop into the Lafayette Science Museum for, Triple D Plus One, the D-Star event being hosted down there. And if you can't be there live Saturday morning at 9 a.m., join us live.amateurlogic.tv. We'll be streaming it live there as well. And we'll be back next week. 7-3.
7-3, everyone.